Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Sunday morning, we woke up to surprising news that the Bears had scheduled an in-person interview with Eddie George, the coach at Tennessee State and the former NFL Pro Bowl All-Pro running back. How do you explain this development in the Bears' coaching search?
It was a huge surprise. Eddie George is a highly talented individual. Last we heard from Eddie George, I remember him being in studio. Dustin, you might remember this, probably within the last couple years, when he was starring in Chicago, the musical, and he was on stage. Eddie George is a classy performer, unbelievably talented individual. He is the head coach at Tennessee State. They were 9-4 this year. He also is the analyst for the big college football show on the Chicago Sports Network, appearing once a week with Joshua Perry and Jake Butt. He's a tremendous analyst. I'm a little hurt if the Bears were going to interview somebody who works for CHSN, I think they got the wrong guy. But no, that's beside the point. Okay.
I too think they should have interviewed Jason Goff.
Oh, very funny. Well played. Nonetheless, Eddie George to me, being the 17th coach that they interviewed, says that they were compiling information, building out their. I think network of people learning what they don't know about their organization. And let's face it, this does check a box. I hate that we have to talk in those terms. I hate that we have to cynically acknowledge the obvious, especially on MLK Day, especially on a day that we want to, you know, have the focus on, you know, progress and diversity and all the things that really the Bears typically have embraced very well. The NFL has embraced pretty well, but Eddie George was brought in person for the primary reason of satisfying a condition and meeting a criteria. And now they are free to pursue and hire whoever they wish because they interviewed two minority candidates as the Rooney Rule requires. So, fascinating development, opened my eyes. Not surprised they looked at Eddie George, who was as charismatic as they come, but I don't think it's leading anywhere.
David, I agree with you. Unfortunately, this seems to be checking a box. It seems to be doing the Rooney Rule, and that's unfortunate. The same thing possibly with former Bear and former NFL head coach Ron Rivera. That was another one, an in-person minority interview. It's a very interesting candidate. I just don't think that this is the time and the place for Eddie George to make his NFL head coaching debut. The Bears aren't at rock bottom. You know, this might be for the Vegas Raiders, who are more rock bottom, believe it or not, in my opinion, than the Bears are. And the Bears are still, in my opinion, a more attractive job. So the news was surprising, but I believe, as you put it, it was done to check a box, unfortunately.
Dustin, I think you bring up a good point when it comes to what franchise is worse off, because I'll take the franchise with a quarterback any day. So I agree with you. The point that I think needs to be made when it comes to interviewing Eddie George is there are so many candidates where if you know them as a player, like you know Eddie George, for example, or you know them for having multiple talents, like you talk to him about being an actor, is that the question then becomes, oh, why didn't they ever get that opportunity? And because there's a predetermined list already that exists so many times. And he and Randy Shannon were part of the Bears diversity and inclusion program, the Bill Walsh Fellowship.
Well, that's a good pull. I forgot about Randy Shannon.
Yeah, the Bill Walsh Fellowship that happened. And so many times it's about getting people's feet in the door. And to me, when you hear that he is a part of that and then they bring him back for an interview, how many times have the Bears interviewed people for a specific position only to have him come back in a different position later? Thomas Brown, obviously, is the best example here. He interviewed over Zoom. That is why we talk about the Rooney Rule requirement. When you open your mind or at least bring in different perspectives, if you're a good manager, you listen. So get him in the door at least to learn something new or learn his perspective. But that program shows that when you develop a relationship with somebody, perhaps it leads to more opportunity down the line for a better representation of candidates who are qualified for your job. It doesn't have to be equality of outcome, but the equality of opportunity remains.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
And that's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 7 a.m. this morning on the Mully and Haw show. How quickly do you expect the Bears coaching search to progress now that the Lions lost an offensive coordinator, Ben Johnson, can interview in person as early as tomorrow? Who, in your mind, is the front runner now for the Bears coaching vacancy?
I think it's still Ben Johnson, even though I don't know that Ben Johnson has the Bears as the front runner for his coaching
front
vacancy.
Front runner meaning you think that's going to happen, or do you think that's what they want to happen?
I think that's what they want
right.
to happen.
Okay.
I think he's still the most sought-after coaching candidate. And so, therefore, he is still the favorite in my mind. Perhaps I am wish-casting a little bit, given what I know about the Raiders in Jacksonville. But do you even think that he needs to talk in person to anybody, guys? I feel like people know what they know. And I don't know. We talk about Todd Monken and what last night's game did for him. And I don't think it affects his candidacy much. I feel the same about Ben Johnson. He wasn't the one throwing interceptions out there on the field. So is it bad that they lost? Yes. Does it take much off of his resume in my mind? No. That guy still calls plays. Let me remind you of that. Because a lot of people think that there might be a repetition of a coach whose name rhymes with Schmat Schmeggy. But I don't think that's the case here. I think he's still the frontrunner for any head coach. No, he called the plays. He didn't stand next to Andy Reid. Dan Campbell's not calling those plays.
But likewise, you remember Matt Nagy came to town after a playoff disappointment that frankly was a good preview of what you would expect after year one with Matt Nagy.
Do you remember that playoff disappointment and what a huge issue was, by the way? It was the lack of running the football.
Right. Good point.
I don't see that with Ben Johnson, guys.
All right. Good point.
A lot of good points made there, but I want to go back to something you just said there, Layla, about who's calling the plays and when they're calling the plays. You know, if you are somebody who's on the fence with Ben Johnson, is there a checkmark against Ben Johnson now after that ill-advised, I have no idea why the play was called. Forget about why the pass was made. Why was the play called when Jameson ends up throwing that interception? I don't understand. Now, if we find out later that Dan Campbell messaged over to Ben Johnson, hey, Ben, I want to know, you know, give me one of your trick plays. You know, let's use the element of surprise at this point, Ben. That came from Campbell. Now, okay, then I'll forgive it because Campbell's in charge. But if that was Ben Johnson at that time in that place, now he might, you know, Jameson shouldn't have thrown the ball, but he shouldn't have been in the position to throw the ball. You didn't need to do that when you did that. It didn't need to be the element of surprise. Now, who do I believe the leading candidate is? I believe the leading candidate right now, it's a very safe pick. It's Mike McCarthy. Uh-huh. It's a safe Bears-esque pick. Everybody's saying that right now they are in the express lanes just opened up right on the Kennedy. It's been a long so the express lanes for the Bears head coaching job wide open. That's what's happening. I actually think it should be slowed down a little bit unless you know through back channels. Cliff Kingsbury should be the guy that the Bears need to be talking to.
Come on.
You can't make the hire without talking to Cliff Kingsbury unless you know, David, that he is out, that he's not interested, that either Caleb doesn't want to work with him, he doesn't want to work with Caleb. Another guy who has not been interviewed that maybe should get talked
to. Who?
I want to add to the list, David. This is going to blow your mind.
All right.
Why has Bobby Slowick Jr. not been interviewed?
Fair. Fair question.
Thank you, Layla.
19 total. And I got two words for you, Dustin. Keenan Allen. That's why that play happened. Keenan Allen. That's the first thing I thought of was Keenan Allen.
There's so much there. There's so much there. Number one, the Kennedy may be open, but you know what? They're hitting all the lights on Las Vegas Boulevard, too. There is open access to to Vegas right now. They have done everything possible. So, Ben Johnson, come on in. We're open all night, 24/7. Whenever you get here, you get here. And when you do, here's a $13 million a year offer. Here's your hand-picked general manager. Here is the keys to the castle. And, oh, by the way, you can work for Tom Brady. That is alluring to a guy like Ben Johnson. So I think the Bears are playing catch-up because the Raiders have more to offer. And I do think this. We'll explore it later. One of the reasons the Bears aren't the most coveted job, Kevin Warren, is because the sitting general manager is in the way of progress if you are Ben Johnson. I think if you're Ben Johnson and you want alignment, as it has been reported, that means you want your own guy. In Chicago, you can't get your own guy because the guy who has presided over 36 losses in three seasons kept his job. That was a choice by Kevin Warren. Choices have ramifications. One of them will be you might lose Ben Johnson. So, front runner, meaning most likely, I'm with Dustin here. It's Mike McCarthy. Maybe the highest floor, not the highest ceiling, but the safest choice. And you've got to be careful here, because if you blow it and you think that you're waiting for Ben Johnson to turn you down, Mike McCarthy may be ending up in New Orleans because he's supposed to interview maybe Tuesday. You can't afford to lose both guys because you know what?
We don't even know
if Cliff Kingsbury is interested.
That's the key, though, David.
We don't even know if he's awake right now.
The key is knowing whether or not he is interested or Caleb's okay with it. That's
Mike McCarthy has one playoff win to show in 5 years with that Dallas
team. By the way, a quick aside. Did you see Caleb Williams with the fresh haircut and the cast on his hand?
Yes. I noticed the cast more than the haircut.
Ooh, but the haircut's pretty sweet. I mean, he looks pretty cool. But the cast, not so cool. Had a cyst removed. It was elective surgery. Nothing to see here. Next.
I mean, should have had two in the pick six.
After the NFC North teams lost in the playoffs, was it really the best division in football? Now two NFC East teams are playing to go to the big game in New Orleans.
I will admit that I submitted this question. I'll admit it.
Okay.
Okay, so
you can answer first.
And yeah, I'm asking myself that question in my heart. I guess I have to say no. It was not the best division in football because somehow two teams who won 14 regular season games before they met for the final game of the regular season, so you had a 15-game winner and a 14-game winner, couldn't even get to the NFC Championship game, and instead it's two teams from the East, arguably the most dysfunctional division in football. I think it's a referendum on everybody, frankly, that this happened. Philly won by the skin of their teeth. They had the home field advantage, and it did pay off. If there was a team you didn't want to see in the playoffs, it was the Rams. But boy, did they show you that against the Vikings. So the class of our division, gentlemen, disappointed. So therefore, I say no. It was not the best division in football.
Layla, I agree. It was not the best division in football. You've got to win a game. Or you're going to say, like the SEC, this is the division that beat the hell out of each other, like the AFC North does as well. And so that's why they weren't able to survive in advance, using a college basketball slogan that I love. The Eagles and the Commanders split. This game is going to be unbelievably interesting. They split in the regular season, both teams winning their games at home. The second game was at the Commanders, a shootout, both teams scoring over 30 points. So, no, the NFC North is not the best division in the NFC side of football.
See, I think that's the problem with the way we look at things, and I understand why. But both of you are, like, behind these bars, and you're prisoners of the moment. We are in the moment where the NFC East stepped forward this weekend, and they were the teams that rose to the occasion. The Eagles, not a surprise. The Commanders are. But still, the Lions won 15 games. The Vikings won 14. The Packers were a team that probably overachieved in the regular season. None of these teams had playoff success that met their expectations. That's highly disappointing. But still, top to bottom, Would you rather have a team that looks closer to the teams in your division, the NFC North, or the Eagles and the Commanders? I mean, I understand why you would say what we're saying. The NFC East is the class of the NFC. At the same time, I do think that the depth in – we can't just ignore the regular season success because we're disappointed with the final outcome. I get why we would do that, but I still am not willing to go there yet. You look at the Commanders, to me, the biggest question in Chicago, the takeaway is, are you more disappointed that the Bears hired the wrong coach in 2022 when they picked Matt Eberflus over Dan Quinn, or are you more distraught over them picking the wrong quarterback when they had the number one overall pick? I am still a Caleb guy, but I understand that's a very uncomfortable debate in Chicago this week. That, to me, is the biggest takeaway. Not which is the best division, but which mistake and which guy is the one that got away for the Bears.
Pick six.
We will hear the entire Sammy Sosa interview at 8 a.m. this morning. But what was your reaction to this answer from Sosa when asked about his statement last month?
21 years, buddy. You know what I mean? Look, 21 years having been here. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, look, I mean, when you're growing up and you pretty much find the Lord, because I did, and you see things now differently. Before, it was hard for me, you know, to do that. But now, you know, I did it with, you know, I mean, with happiness. I mean, I did it because, you know, look, when I grew up, I mean, when I was playing, you know, I played great every day. I maybe heard some people that I don't even know about it. So that's why, I sent my statements. And I think it was, you know, fantastic. I mean, let's say 90% of the fan was very happy. 10%, you know, like always, is going to be say whatever they want. And, hey, so be.
But were you apologizing for something specific, for the way you played the game or for the way that you hit the home runs? Were you apologizing for anything specific?
Like I say, I was 21 years out, you know, without coming here to Chicago. And believe me, my friend, they love me, they support me. And definitely, that's one of the reasons why I did.
What is Sammy apologizing for?
It's a good question. I still am. It's very vague. I really appreciated the opportunity to interview Sammy as we did Friday night. We will hear the interview here at 8 o'clock. Bruce and I had some time alone with Sammy Sosa. It was about a 15-minute interview. And I came away feeling appreciative for the opportunity, but still a little bit, I don't want to say dissatisfied, but the reaction, you had to ask him the question, for what are you apologizing? Didn't expect to have an answer that was that, you know, in terms of specific or had the clarity, but you had to ask it. It was his the way he chose to respond to it. He was asked a variation of that question several different times, but it was cool to see Sammy introduced. I was there in the room when the crowd reacted in a way that you expected. It was probably the second loudest ovation. You can debate, but Ryan Sandberg is Mr. Cub. He got the biggest ovation, but I believe that Sammy got his due. He made the rounds. He hugged it out with Kerry Wood, it appeared. And so, yeah, it was a little unclear what he meant. 21 years, was he apologizing to the fans or whatever? I'm not so sure that crowd at the Cubs convention cared. But we did have to try anyway, and overall, it was good to have Sammy Sosa back in Chicago.
It was fun to see him. I was not there. I did watch on Marquee that part. I did listen to your interview, David. I listened to your whole show. You and Bruce were awesome on Saturday. You guys had a lot of great stuff and lots of stuff we should get to. I was impressed when Sosa came out. My eyes went right to Kerry Wood. I was trying to watch the body language, trying to see if they would fist bump or hug it out, as you said. They at least were able to publicly look like they were okay. Now, I'd like to see them on like a panel and be interviewed by somebody together, like you and Bruce at the same time, to try to talk through some things. But it sounded like, I mean, Sammy talked about religion, said he, you know, his religion helped him get to this point. I think he was craving to get back with the Cubs after a 21-year absence, and he was willing to do whatever the Cubs and Tom Ricketts and the Ricketts family wanted him to do in order to get back to a place that he obviously missed and the fans missed him. And I just wanted to go back. I didn't catch it on Marquee, and I'm sure they would have tried to have bleeped it out. David, did you catch anybody booing Sosa at the convention or booing him or snarling at him when you guys were able to talk to him?
Not audibly, no. I did have some secondhand people who reached out to me and DM'd me on X and Twitter that they were there for that purpose. I did not see them or hear them.
I was just curious because, I mean, you know, my guy Crowley had the Sammy Palooza sign in the front row on Marquee holding it up and everything. So it was really cool to see Sosa back out there. It was fun. It took me back. It was fun.
It was great to see Sammy Sosa. And to me, I thought about whose apology was ever acceptable from this era. And the only one I could think of off the top of my head that was satisfactory to whatever needed to be done was Andy Pettit. And to me, it was largely because of timing. Pettit came out, he acknowledged it, he was graceful about it. You could argue that Sammy took a little bit of what Pettit said and made it his own. I'm okay with that playbook because it wasn't our job to legislate. It was the commissioner. It was Bud Selig in baseball at the time, and they didn't. So I'm not here to play judge, jury, and executioner about it when he was one of many. And when the timing piece came into play this time, it was that when Sammy Sosa acknowledged it, which is what Tom Ricketts wanted. It's not necessarily going to be the exact statement that you want, but it was an acknowledgement. Ricketts, in his timing, responded immediately and responded in kind. So that was good for me. Welcome back. Let's all move forward like adults.
It's picked off for a pick six. Yeah.
What did you make of Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts pushing back at the notion of fans thinking the Cubs aren't spending enough?
Because they think somehow we have all these dollars that the Dodgers have or the Mets have or the Yankees have, then we just keep it, which isn't true at all. Like, what happens is we try to break even every year, and that's about it.
Try to break even every year. Your reaction to Tom Ricketts?
Short on time, so we'll make this quick. That was an unsatisfying response from the fan standpoint. I know what Tom Ricketts is saying. They're not the Dodgers, and they're not as willing to lose as much money as maybe the Yankees or the Mets are. Owning a baseball team is a losing proposition when you're talking about profit margin. The Cubs lost as much as $20 million last year. So when they're going to talk about in terms of being aggressive, you want to see them in the market for Tanner Scott, who went to the Dodgers on Sunday. You want him to be in the market for Soto and Alonso, all those things. Doesn't look like it's going to happen, but I do think they can still add to the mix with the money they saved on getting rid of Cody Bellinger. That, to me, was a takeaway. I got the feeling from Jed Hoyer and from Tom Ricketts, they know something we don't, and it's up to them to add to the mix, because that's what it sounded like they were saying without necessarily saying it over the weekend.
Great answer, David. Unsatisfying is a great way to put it, but I'm with you. I am still going to give Tom and Jed the time and Carter to finish this thing up. Very disappointing, obviously. Roky Sasaki, Tanner Scott, both going to the Dodgers officially since the last time we were all together. But stay tuned. Let's see what they do by the time they get to pitchers and catchers in less than a month out in Arizona. And I'll be ready to bring it if they don't do something.
I guess I'm happy. No, that's not the right word. I guess I'm okay with the fact that the Cubs are one of many teams frustrated with the fact that they can't sign the people they want. The Red Sox come to mind, by the way, and all that. There are other contending teams. Does that make it okay? Absolutely not.
Right.
You know who else did a lot after they lost a major free agent? The Yankees.
Yeah.
Cody Bellinger's there hanging out right now.
Right.
I'll be interested to see how that works out in
they
right
field. They
pivoted
well after losing Soto.
Like a Cody Bellinger home run to right field sounds pretty good to me. Yankee Stadium, that's where I was going with that. But nobody wants to hear it, unfortunately. And breaking even looks different in a lot of ways. What are executive salaries when you talk about breaking even? What are administrative salaries? Where is that money going? The Cubs did go over the CBT last year. I think that's important to note here. So what is the vision? I think we still have yet to see it. And do they want to really listen to Craig Counsell's words that were spoken in September about where he thinks this team is? Because according to that assessment, I don't know that they've done enough. They say they're not done. And I appreciate Tom Ricketts speaking. But tell me how you're going to get it done.
Touchdown, pick six, Notre Dame.
Oh, some more of that tonight, please, please. So with tonight's national championship game between Notre Dame and Ohio State, which program needs a national title more, and what do you expect to happen, and how about a prediction?
Okay, I think Notre Dame needs the national title more. especially after the last time they were in this game.
Wow.
That was a disappointment. Yes, and I'm not here to hate on Notre Dame by any means.
That was bad.
But unfortunately, Ohio State is playing like a diesel going downhill at a 30-degree angle. They are a train that is going to be hard to stop.
Yes.
I also think the over hits here. 45.5 is the line, and I think we go over. I think it's like 30-28, Ohio State.
30-28, Ohio State. All right, Layla. Interesting. I think the best from a gambling aspect, look for the first half under. I think this is going to be a bit of a taffy pull to start things out, unless somehow Ohio State is able to out-muscle Notre Dame, but I don't expect that happening. The spread in this game is 8.5 per our friends over at Circus Sports Illinois. I don't need the points. I don't want the points.
Yes.
But I'll take the points.
Yes.
And Notre Dame on the money line.
Ooh.
Irish 21, Ohio State 20. Ohio State needs this more than Notre Dame to answer the question all the way through.
I love it, Dustin. I am suspending I am suspending belief in all common sense and being very transparent here. This is a prediction with my heart, not my head. I don't care about being wrong because Notre Dame needs this worse than Ohio State. It's been since 1988 that they have won a national title. Do you know how long ago that is? Yes, you do, Chicago, because it's been since 1985 that the Bears have won a Super Bowl. Same thing on campus in South Bend. No, this is not Brian Kelly's 2012 version. No, this is not the team that's going to fail to show up like the team did that night in Manti Te'o's last game in a Notre Dame uniform. This is Marcus Freeman's moment. This is Riley Leonard's moment. This is a Notre Dame moment, and it's going to happen. Irish 28, Buckeyes 24. Celebrate and party like it's 1988. Yes, that is going to happen. All right, that is our pick six, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think. But before we get to your calls and your reaction, we've got the extra point. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Like, I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Scoreboard update.
The Score Update Studio brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants. Do that today. Josh Allen scored two TDs. The Bills forced three turnovers, and the Bills advanced to the AFC title game, holding off the Ravens 27-25. Earlier Sunday, the Eagles shut down the Rams 28-22. Saquon Barkley running for two long scores, 78 and 62 yards. So your AFC and NFC title games are set, and you will hear those games right here on The Score beginning at 1 o'clock. The coverage: Commanders at the Eagles, Eagles -5, and the Bills will be at the Chiefs, Chiefs -1. Again, both games on The Score beginning next Sunday at 1 o'clock. Last night here on the Score, the Bulls fell to the Blazers 113-102. They're back on the Score tonight. Bulls at the Clippers, 9:15 pregame. Tonight, also college football's national championship game. We've got Ohio State, Notre Dame down in Atlanta. And the coverage beginning on our sister station, News Radio 780 WBBM at 5:30. The Blackhawks, they're going to be at the United Center hosting the Hurricanes. Score Update Studio brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants. Do that today.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What was your biggest takeaway from the four NFL playoff games that many considered the best weekend in football? Is there anything that happened you believe the Bears can learn from or copy? And check out this comment from Ravens head coach John Harbaugh.
There's nobody that has more heart and cares more and fights more than Mark, who's we wouldn't be here without Mark Andrews. You know, that's what you say to him. So, you know, it's like anything else. I mean, destiny is a decision that you make, and it's a decision is how you handle, you know, what comes in your life. You know, and Mark will handle it fantastic, like he always does, because he's a high character person. He's a tough person, and he's a good person. So, proud of him, just like I'm proud of all the guys.
Mark Andrews' rough night last night in Buffalo, had a fumble and then dropped that two-point conversion. So, biggest takeaway from NFL divisional weekend.
That's a great comment from John Harbaugh. In the moment, having that presence of mind and being the kind of coach that has your players back, that goes a long way. But that's why the Ravens are who they are and why they are perennially in playoff contention. They aren't getting to the Super Bowl yet again, but the biggest takeaway from that loss, from the four games that we watched and enjoyed, it's not exactly a revelation, but you need to get clutch performances out of your quarterback, and you have to have the right head coach. And the Bears are trying to get the right head coach, and they believe that they have a quarterback capable of doing for his team what Jaden Daniels did for the Commanders, what Jalen Hurts does for the Eagles, what Matthew Stafford, frankly, did for the Rams. And obviously Patrick Mahomes speaks for himself. And you look at Josh Allen. These are quarterbacks playing at a very high level, elite level, and you have to have that to go where you need to go. The Bears are in the process of trying to build out around the quarterback now. They're trying to find the right head coach who puts everything together. But the big takeaway is that when you have guys at that level, as we saw over the weekend, You are checking the right boxes, and you are close because of the quarterback and the head coach combination, collaboration, and you've got to get that right.
Well, John Harbaugh, taking a line basically from one of my favorite movies, Gladiator, what we do in life echoes through eternity. My problem with what happened last night was that what I read, I don't know, I will admit, when you get up at 2:30 in the morning, as soon as that game was over, I rolled over, I shut the TV off. Mark Andrews was not available to the media last night, so he fumbled and dropped the two-point conversion and was not available, did not speak. Maybe he'll speak later today as the Ravens clean out their lockers in Baltimore. The takeaway for the Bears are things you can copy. If when you lose the turnover battle, you lose the game. Also, from the Bears' standpoint, the Vikings, the Packers and the Lions are all vulnerable. Look at those games and learn how to beat those teams. One thing Caleb Williams does very, very well is protect the football. If you don't lose the turnover battle, you got a good shot at winning in the NFL. That's my takeaway.
It's a valid takeaway, Dustin, but you know what else is valid? Caleb Williams didn't want to take a shot downfield, and my goodness, Jaden Daniels was unafraid.
Absolutely
there
correct.
There were some throws that he made where, you know, the Lions' defensive back has a hand in the face.
Yeah.
And he still drops it perfectly.
That was great throw.
That is the stuff where you put the league on notice. You don't have to do it every drive. I'm not asking you to get weird all the time, but my goodness, was that a show of progress and what good practices do. The biggest takeaway, number one, is run the football, guys. All of you need to run the football more. I'm talking to the Bears as well. You know what happened? Philly ran the ball, and look how they won the game. The elements will get you. The other piece of this is Jalen Carter and
oh my
and Jaden Daniels really put you on notice there with the decisions that you've been making.
Yikes.
Darnell Wright needed to be drafted. I understand that. But maybe if you draft offensive linemen earlier, you're not in the same position, yada, yada, yada. If it's and Mets were candy and nuts, then we'd all have a Merry Christmas, right? But
Jalen Carter, two sacks, two TFLs, and a forced fumble.
Yeah, he was a game wrecker.
Yes, he was
He was exactly what you needed. Run the ball, though, Rams, and maybe you're in a better position to not lose the way you did. So that's my deal.
Were the Bears even in on Saquon Barkley last offseason?
Didn't they say they were? Wasn't that somebody threw that out there?
I don't
think
he was ever coming to Chicago, but I wonder why. Why not?
I thought that was the case, though, that they wanted him, but then DeAndre Swift was their second choice.
Yeah, and maybe Saquon wanted to go to Philadelphia, stay in the division all along.
But they didn't run the ball enough there.
They did not with DeAndre Swift either.
So that was my biggest issue. My biggest thing that was up my craw, so to speak, was just run the football, everyone. And, oh, look at all the decisions. You pass on them, and you see them in the playoffs when it matters the most.
She's Layla Rahimi. She's in for Mully today. And she has thoughts on what dropped Friday near the end of our show on ESPN.com, a extensive look at the role agents play in orchestrating, choreographing, and manipulating the process of head coaching searches. That's happened here in Chicago. Trace Armstrong, former Bear, has been the shadow president at times, and the role he has played in this team still being felt at Hallis Hall. We'll address that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Layla Rahimi in for Mully today. So before we got to the weekend, ESPN dropped a story that was very revealing. It was very comprehensive. And Kalen Kaler from ESPN.com, formerly of The Athletic, Northwestern grad from Medill. She will be on the program or on the station at 1 o'clock today, by the way. She had a very good story about the role agents play in the process, the hiring process, Layla. Wanted to know, bullet points, your takeaway, biggest takeaways from that story that I think was well done, and yet information that I think we were aware of, the role agents play in maybe pairing candidates and coupling general managers and coaches who are both their clients, like Trace Armstrong did with Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus. I just don't think we've seen it presented in as comprehensive of a fashion as she did very skillfully for ESPN.com.
You know, there are times where we think that there are established facts among sports fans or that we've talked about it enough to where people know. But whenever we posted about Trace Armstrong on the Midday Show a few months ago, it went viral because people want somebody to blame and they know that it's more than who they're seeing. People are smarter than that. I still believe that. And the case in point was how many people wanted somebody else to blame when it came to the Bears' performance and they got the name they wanted in Trace Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
People like blaming agents because they like blaming third parties. Scott Boras was seen as such a divisive figure for so long in baseball. The last couple of years, I think, have mitigated that a bit.
Well, you need a villain. I think it's a convenient villain. And Trace Armstrong being the shadow president, as we have referred to him, makes it easier to find a specific person to blame for the presence of Matt Eberflus and maybe the way that he ended up at Hallis Hall.
Responsibility still lies on those who put those people in power.
Absolutely.
George McCaskey still gives Trace Armstrong that much power. We'll see what Kevin Warren does in all of this. But I was impressed and amazed to see how many people didn't know that this was a process and that is common. And it's not just Trace Armstrong, by the way, who does this, but it was the illustration that Kaler gave so correctly of the myopia, how people just put blinders on, how you can't even get people in the NFL because it's such a common practice to even acknowledge that it exists, and how it really is a losing practice outside of the Chiefs. She pointed out that five teams in the league all pair the GM and the coach having the same agent, and only the Chiefs win.
And
the other teams
were
Arizona.
Arizona.
the Bears, Cleveland, obviously mentioned Kansas City, and the Giants.
The Giants, right. And the Giants were a package deal. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane were definitely together, and that was understood. The thing that stood out to me as much as anything is, as I said, the information wasn't as startling as the perception around the league that she documented, people talking about the Bears as if they're talking about a team that will never know what they don't know and will always be the team that maybe gets in its own way. That was troubling. If you're expecting clarity and a bright light to go on in the midst of this coaching search and this process, that story was very discouraging because you wonder if they're ever going to get it. And odds are the answer is no.
The quote, you know, we talk about pulled quotes if you're a newspaper person. That was my major in college. It was just classical journalism. So pull quote is the one that they highlight. You know, it's the one that they make big in the middle of the newspaper or the website you're watching. And the two that got to me were, I've never seen one agent have so much influence on one team and had so little success, but they keep going back and taking his guys, said one coaching agent who requested anonymity to speak freely on the topic. And we all kind of shake our heads like, have they not figured this out yet? It's because they haven't.
It's because they haven't. It's a revealing story. You want to check it out. ESPN.com will refer to it throughout the show. Kalen Kaler will be on The Score at 1 o'clock today. And we'll get Brad Biggs' impression of what she wrote and where the Bears' head coaching search stands. It's Biggs time when we come back. Layla Rahimi in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.